Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is time now for Ask an Expert. Every weekday at this time on KCBS, we're giving you direct access to top experts across various fields. Today, we're looking at the history of policing in the U.S. in the aftermath of the Tyre Nichols death at the hands of five Memphis police officers. To answer your questions, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central News line by Alexis Harris, sociology professor at the University of Washington, who studies institutional decision-making and how institutions like the criminal justice system impacts individuals. If you have a question you would like answered, please email us, as always, at askus@kcbsradio.com. Professor Harris, thank you so much for joining us to discuss this important matter. Historically, I think people don't know the link between slavery and policing in this country. Could you kind of give us a nutshell view of that?
Sure. Historically, there are sort of three strands of our history that can inform our understanding of the contemporary criminal legal system in the United States. The first strand is from England. Many people write that the contemporary policing in the U.S. was based off of the 1700s of England and that model where people were charged the police to govern the king's household, all the land and the people within it. Another strand of history is really the distinct flavor of the U.S. criminal legal system that evolved from slavery. People were paid initially to catch people who ran away from being enslaved. And then the third strand is really just thinking about the historical development of social control in the United States, from slave leasing, the controlling of black people for labor and profit, to convict leasing. The state would actually lease out people for profit, right? This is the relationship that black people had to the criminal legal system in many ways. Black codes, which allowed for people to be duly convicted, you know, with the 13th Amendment in 1865, people could be re-enslaved if they were duly convicted. So these black codes were created in 1860 and all the way up through the 1900s that made being black essentially illegal, a violation to be on a corner, a violation not to have a contract of labor that had to be renewed every year. So we can really just see this history and the relationship between the criminal legal system, policing, and also not just black people or people with African descent, but indigenous people and people of Mexican ancestry in this country. And then I think many people are familiar with the concept of mass incarceration between 1974 and the current rise. And then what I study also specifically is the rise of monetary sanctions, so legal debt, which then continues to keep people tethered to the criminal legal system. So if we have this historical viewpoint, we can really see how social control has always targeted black people, people of Mexican ancestry in this country, and indigenous populations.
What do you see today as the biggest problem in how black and brown people are policed?
I feel that many communities, I don't feel that, the evidence shows that many communities are over-policed. As I mentioned, I study something called fines and fees, and that's a big problem with communities for a couple different reasons. One is people who make contacts all the way from traffic, citations, juvenile convictions to serious felony convictions are given fines and fees for the cost of a public defender or the cost of just being processed. That creates debt for people who are disproportionately poor. And then that debt can lead to warrants related to non-payment. But also, so there's that. And so people can be policed because of warrants that exist. And that contact can lead to, you know, negative interactions and even trauma and violence with police. But there's also these pretextual traffic stops where police are looking to one, find people with warrants, but also in some ways it can be used to harass individuals and give them citations. So with the most recent killing of Mr. Nichols, he was pulled over. We still don't know why, but they say it was something related to traffic. And there's several people that we can go back to that have been killed solely because they were pulled over for some ticky-tack traffic citation. Dante Wright in Minneapolis killed with, you know, an air freshener, right? That's why they said they pulled him over, hanging from his rearview mirror.
Everything you described in the first 4 minutes of this interview feeds into the historic distrust of police by people of color.
Right. I mean, if you have these systems where you know that police are over-surveilling your community, looking for money, looking for people on warrants, you're going to have a sense of distrust. I mean, I think even seeing these incidents, these murders on the television makes people scared of the police. You know, I was talking with a group of people the other day, students, and, you know, all of the black men had plans of what to do when they get pulled over, plans to stay safe, plans to de-escalate the interaction themselves, plans to make sure that they get home safely. Right or wrong, and I never want to give the impression that I think law enforcement are all bad, but this is the image, right? And these moments really create distrust of all police, not just the ones that have done the killings.
What's unusual in this case, the Tyre Nichols' death, both the victim and the perpetrators were black. So what about hiring practices? So what do people need to be looking for who are deciding who can be police officers? How does it need to change?
Right. Well, I think bottom line is 6+ men killed another man. Right. It doesn't matter who the race of the killers were. I think what that really highlights that, you know, Angela Davis writes, racism is dangerous because it's not dependent on the individual actors, but really deeply embedded in the apparatus of the system. So it's the criminal legal system that is problematic. And so we need definitely to have, to do away with qualified immunity so police can't hide that they need to be fully accountable. We need to have higher standards for our police, just like doctors, right? Doctors can't have bad days, as a student said the other day. Doctors have insurance. Doctors can be sued for malpractice. Individual police officers should be held to a higher standard than other citizens. They should be trained in de-escalation. We should have community oversight boards that have real authority. And we can go on and on. I mean, the George Floyd Policing Act that should have been passed last year really had many of these components that are important to ensuring that we have a system in place that can hold people accountable, that trains them, but then also hires people who are truly qualified and professional in the way that they interact with all people they interact with.
So why the resistance to reforms, especially at the federal level?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's the policing labor unions are strong. One hat I wear is, you know, I work with an organization here, and we did hearings actually on this in Washington State. And surprising to me is other unions, not police unions, but other unions were somewhat worried about putting higher restraints and standards for police union negotiations. So I think that we have to have real conversations about what are our priorities on the streets, and do those priorities in safety override the power of unions to negotiate away or negotiate how their employees will be held accountable and punished.
You know, we've been talking about policing in macro terms, police departments, mm-hmm. but in this particular case, you had a specific unit within the police, sort of a high-speed anti-crime unit that was responsible for this. And a lot of cities, big cities, have such units. What are your thoughts on them?
Right. I think they appear to be problematic in certain ways. I don't know if there has been a systematic analysis yet of all of these, but if I recall correctly, the police that beat Rodney King were of a similar type of unit. So it appears, at least I'm saying, this specific unit that with the law enforcement officer that killed Tyre Nichols, that unit on that day acted as a gang themselves. So I don't know if it's about the culture of these units, but we really need to have a strong investigation nationally of how these units behave. I've read a great deal about that even the local politicians gave this unit the authority to act rather harshly to try and control that community. But that in lies the problem. It's not truly creating relationships with the individuals in the community. It's not truly creating a safe environment.
Well, this is a topic that we could discuss for days, weeks, months, and have in many quarters. Thank you very much. That's Professor Alexis Harris. She teaches sociology at the University of Washington. We've been talking about the history of policing in the U.S.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.